Hello, this is Maggie. Welcome to Dawn, the Didcot, Abingdon and Wantage talking newspaper, recorded on Wednesday, the 24th of June. As usual, you'll hear a variety of news stories from local sources. At the end of the recording, you'll be able to listen to extra items from the RNIB magazine service. This week, I'm the editor, and our readers are Sandra, Karen, Terry, and me. Our technician is John, and Alison and Ufuk are in the office. I'm going to start with a quotation from Stella Gibbons's Cold Comfort Farm. "There was not a breath of wind. It was the loveliest hour of the English year, 7 o'clock on Midsummer Night." We've just passed Midsummer Night, and we certainly know that summer is here. We start our stories with a report on some schools having to close in the heat wave.
Hello, this is Sandra. More schools to close as county basks in heat wave. About 67 known schools will be closed or will close early today due to the excessive heat and the red heat health alert. Yesterday, 25 schools closed or closed at midday as temperatures soared past 30 degrees centigrade in Oxford and Oxfordshire, while a further 52 will additionally shut today. In the city, Cheyne School, the Oxford Academy, Matthew Arnold School, West Oxford Community Primary School, the Iffley Academy, Wood Farm Primary School, Cuttislow Primary School, Springfield School and Northern House Academy will all have full or partial closures today as the weather gets even hotter. Some will remain shut or open with restricted hours until the end of the school week. Likewise, in Abingdon, Dunmore Primary School, Long Furlong Primary School, Thameside Primary School, Fitzharris School, John Mason School, Larkmead School, Rushcommon County Primary School, St Nicholas CE Primary School, Thomas Reed County Primary School, Caldecott County Primary School, Carswell Community Primary School are all also closed or closing midday. Thousands of pupils will be at home today and for the rest of the week in what's being dubbed the Great British Bunk Off. Children at some schools remaining open, such as the Oxford Spires Academy, have been told that they can wear PE kit rather than full school uniform, which can involve long trousers and blazers. Stacey Booth, GMB National Officer, said, "No pupil or member of staff should be expected to learn or work in unsafe levels of heat. Once temperatures exceed 30 degrees centigrade, schools should act quickly, use the cooler parts of the building, reduce physical demands, increase water breaks, and make sensible adjustments to uniform and duties. These are practical steps that can make a real difference. If they can't be done, school leaders should consider closing parts of the schools." School Leaders Union, NAHT, and Teachers Union, NASUWT, have called for school buildings to be modernised and a legally enforceable maximum classroom temperature to be set. The Department for Education said it does not normally advise schools to close during hot weather because attendance is the best way for pupils to learn and reach their potential, but that school leaders should ensure that they take any steps necessary to make sure children are safe and comfortable, as it laid out guidance on how to keep pupils safe. A heat dome settling over Western Europe could bring temperatures of nearly 40 degrees centigrade by Wednesday. Met Office spokesman Graham Madge said the Met Office is flagging 39 degrees centigrade as a headline maximum temperature on Thursday, most likely for somewhere in London or the South East. "It is possible we could see temperatures higher than the 39 degrees centigrade if the final values are at the upper end of our narrow range." For a full list and details of each individual school, visit oxfordshire.gov.uk.
Hello, this is Karen. Cancer survivor Neil urges safety in the sun. A former holiday rep from Oxfordshire, who was told he had just months to live after receiving his third skin cancer diagnosis, is urging people to enjoy the sun safely this summer. Neil Sammons was diagnosed with melanoma, the most serious form of skin cancer, in 2001 and 2017, and was treated with surgery. But on New Year's Eve 2020, after the COVID-19 pandemic delayed his regular scans, the operation discovered that his melanoma had returned and spread. The 63-year-old father of three from Blueberry near Didcot said, "Being told I had stage 4 melanoma left me in absolute disbelief. And then when it sank in, I thought, wow, this is serious. I had a few drinks, few dark days, then knew I had to fight it. Thankfully, due to advances in research, I was given a type of treatment called immunotherapy, which was a game changer for me. Now I'm doing well and only require yearly scans." Mr. Salmon is speaking out as new analysis from Cancer Research UK reveals annual cases of melanoma skin cancer in the south and east have risen above 3,200, among the highest recorded in the region. Backing the charity's sun safety campaign with Nivea Sun, the travel specialist is highlighting growing concerns over UK melanoma cases, projected to reach a record 26,500 a year by 2040. Mr. Salmon said, "As a young holiday rep, awareness of the risk was lower then. Now we know that most cases of skin cancer here and abroad are preventable, so I hope that I can encourage people to take precautions. It's natural to want to make the most of the warmer days, but the sun protection isn't just for holidays, and it doesn't mean missing out. It just means taking care wherever you are. Despite my own diagnosis, I know that you can still enjoy warmer days by taking three simple steps. Seek shade, cover up, and apply sunscreen regularly and generously." After his emotional cancer journey, Mr. Sammons has joined forces with Cancer Research UK and Nivea Sun to share the advice and tips on how to enjoy the sun safely.
Hello, this is Terry. People are urged to leave 999 lines clear for emergencies. People are being urged to keep these 999 lines clear for life-threatening emergencies. SCAS, South Central Ambulance Service, has issued the plea as red and amber heat health alerts are in place across Oxfordshire, Berkshire, Buckinghamshire and Hampshire. Demand is expected to rise in the extreme conditions, with a similar spell of hot weather in May promoting a surge in 999 calls, including many from people repeatedly asking when their ambulance would arrive. Mark Ainsworth, Executive Director of Operations at SCAS, said, "Periods of extreme heat always place additional pressure on ambulance services. We expect to be exceptionally busy over the coming days, and, as always, our priority will be to reach the most seriously ill and injured patients first. This means that people with less urgent conditions may face significant waits for an ambulance response." He has asked people not to call 999 back simply to request an estimated arrival time, as SCAS can't provide one, and such calls could delay responses to genuine emergencies. People who are well enough and able to make their own way to hospital are being encouraged to do so if advised. Mr. Ainsworth said, "If you are advised to attend an emergency department and are able to get there yourself, or a friend or family member can take you, please do so. If circumstances change and you no longer require an ambulance, please let us know, so that we can redirect those resources to other patients in need." SCAS has also issued heat safety advice, urging people to avoid excessive alcohol, stay hydrated, keep to the shade, and check on vulnerable neighbours and relatives. The public is reminded to limit exercise to the coolest parts of the day and to wear suitable clothing and sunscreen. SCAS has also warned of the dangers of open water, especially as teenagers celebrate the end of exams. Mr. Ainsworth said, even on the hottest days, water temperatures can remain surprisingly cold. Entering cold water suddenly can trigger cold water shock, causing an involuntary gasp reflex, rapid breathing, and loss of swimming ability. This can put even strong swimmers in difficulty within seconds. The Trust has thanked its staff, Emergency Operations Centre teams and volunteers, and said support measures are in place to help crews working in challenging conditions. Mr. Ainsworth said, our staff continue to do an incredible job in very challenging circumstances. We would like to thank them for everything they do to keep our community safe during periods of extreme demand and extreme weather. Further heat safety information is available on the NHS website.
County Music Festival is named one of the country's best. A county music event has been named one of the best music festivals in the UK. Truck Festival, held at Hill Farm Steventon, ranked 8th in a new festival league table compiled by outdoor experts Go Outdoors. It is based on ticket prices, social media posts, Google searches, festival duration and average rainfall in the area around the dates of the festival. Events in Oxfordshire, the Isle of Wight and Reading, along with London and Newquay, help give the south of England 6 out of the top 10 spots. Truck Festival earned a score of 9.1 out of 10 with a ticket price of £224 for the 3-day event. Natalie Wolfenden, author and hiking enthusiast at Go Outdoors, said, no two festival days look the same. A one-day city festival needs a very different kit list from a four-night camping weekend, while outdoor and adventure-led events often require more specialist preparation. For any festival, comfortable footwear and waterproof jackets should be near the top of the list, especially with long days on your feet and unpredictable UK weather.
Historical Scarecrow Trail marks 21st year. East Hagbourne's annual Scarecrow Trail marked its 21st anniversary. This milestone in the village tradition took place this month and featured 36 scarecrows on display, all based on the theme of historical figures. The event continues to be a highlight for visitors of all ages, combining creativity with community spirit. An organiser said, it is a fun community event that appeals to visitors of all ages. Visitors are really welcome to come to the village to look at the displays. This is a great outdoors event suitable for all ages, so do get there if you can to have some fun and generate some funds at the same time. This year's figures included Emmeline Pankhurst, Horatio Nelson, Sir David Attenborough, Henry VIII and Michael Jackson. All proceeds from the trail will be divided equally between Oxfordshire Wildlife Rescue and WaterAid. Organisers describe the trail as a great way to enjoy a day out while supporting good causes.
1 million pound centre to train electricians of the future. A major investment in technical training is set to power the next generation of electricians. Leading apprenticeship provider JTL has opened its new Thames Valley Training Centre following a £1 million investment to expand electrical training in the region. The flagship facility was formally opened by Baroness Jackie Smith, Minister for Skills, during a visit
during which she met apprentices, employers and industrial partners. Baroness Smith said, "Apprenticeships are central to our mission to grow the economy and equip people with the skills they need to succeed. And it is fantastic to meet the young apprentices at JTL's new Thames Valley Training Centre. This is the kind of dynamic, hands-on environment which will help produce a skilled workforce of the future. In this case, one which will help deliver our housing ambitions and accelerating our transition to clean energy. The refurbished centre features a dedicated electrical workshop, classrooms, breakout areas, and space for endpoint assessment preparation. It will train around 200 apprentices a year, supporting the growth of the electrical workforce. During the visit, Baroness Smith saw apprentices in action, including those training us in solar and wind farm technologies." Sorry, my glasses keep steaming up. And met Freya Taylor, the Western Region winner of JTL's Regional Rising Star Award. She spoke to the employers, including Bowen Electrical, Haysham Electrical, contractors Dark and Taylor, and Lowe and Oliver, about how to encourage more SMEs to take on the apprenticeships. Alongside the main course, JTL has invested £250,000 in a new 8-bay AM2 assessment centre to reduce waiting times for critical industry assessments. Waiting times for a first AM2 assessment in some parts of the country currently up to 6 months. Chris Clayton, Chief Executive of JTL, said, "It was a pleasure to welcome the Skills Minister to JTL's new Thames Valley Centre and to see her officially declare it open. This facility represents a major investment in the future of our industry training, around 200 apprentices each year, and reinforcing JTL's unwavering commitment in delivering the highest quality apprenticeships. As the UK looks to drive the economy growth and deliver it on its infrastructure ambitions, the need for skilled electricians has never been greater. Dedicated training centres like this are critical to building the workforce created to power that growth. The creation of the AM2 Assessment Centre at this facility is another significant step forward. With demand high across the country, this will help more electricians complete their qualifications more quickly, supporting productivity and ensuring businesses have to process to have skilled workforce they need."
Redknapp tackles council on England flag court ban. Football legend Harry Redknapp has slammed Oxfordshire County Council as it seeks to ban flying England flags on lampposts and public property through court action. The authority has applied to the High Court for an injunction to prevent the continued unauthorised placement of flags on or near roads as England's World Cup campaign ramps up. It called out the Raise the Colours group, which for the past year has been putting up flags across Oxfordshire, even after the council has taken them down. Oxfordshire County Council described the flags as distressing and issued a formal legal notice to the group in March, insisting they stop. Speaking on the Daily Tea podcast, host Camilla Tominey described the Liberal Democratic-led administration as spoilsport, before adding, "What is wrong with these people?" Harry Redknapp, who was on the podcast, reacted by calling the councillors stupid with idiotic opinions. Mr. Redknapp, who began his managerial career as an assistant coach to Bobby Moore at Oxford City in the late 1970s, said, "We are proud to be British. That is what we are. Fly the flags. Be proud of your country. Don't worry about these stupid councillors who have idiotic opinions. We are proud to be British. Don't be ashamed to be British." Council leader Tim Bearder declined to respond to the comments until after the High Court judge delivers his verdict on Tuesday. A civil injunction is a court order that requires an individual or an organisation to stop specific activities. If granted, it would prohibit further unauthorised installations on or near the highway and allow the council to take enforcement actions if the order is breached. Oxfordshire County Council said its staff had been subject to abuse and harassment by Raise the Colours members when they are taking the flags down. Mr. Bearder previously said, "This activity is not about national pride or unity. It is unlawful behaviour which has caused fear and division within our communities. We have a clear responsibility to keep people safe and ensure our public spaces are welcoming and inclusive for everyone." Newspaper columnist Alison Pearson said, "I'm afraid as the World Cup progresses, the poor Lib Dems may be exposed to rather a lot of England flags." As of January the 15th, Oxfordshire County Council has spent £16,585 on removing 396 flags from streetlights. It's also received 223 complaints on the Fix My Street portal relating to flags being attached to the highways and on street furniture. This all came to a head, though, in March, when police arrested a 44-year-old man from Bromsgrove in Worcestershire for his part in putting up flags in Oxford's Abingdon Road. He was arrested on suspicion of causing racially and religiously aggravated harassment, alarm, or distress.
Raise the Colours activists to stop raising England flags. Raise the Colours activists have agreed to stop raising England flags after a court battle. Ryan Bridge, Ben Cullen and Trudy Wells, as well as Kevin Good, who did not attend court, have said they will no longer put flags up on lampposts in Oxfordshire. Oxfordshire County Council brought legal action against the group at the High Court, winning a ruling to stop people raising flags near highways, saying it involved safety risks as well as trespass and obstruction. The widespread flying of Union and St George's Cross flags, following an online campaign called Operation Raise the Colours, has become contentious, and several local authorities have removed them from public infrastructure. While some politicians criticised the removals, others claimed the increased number being flown was a result of xenophobia or racism. The County Council said flags had been placed on or near public roads without permission for months, despite a formal legal notice in March and pre-action legal letters sent to individuals last month. Robin Green, for the council, told the High Court that Mr. Bridge, Mr. Cullen, Mr. Good and Ms. Wells had been involved. After a short hearing where the group represented themselves and spoke to Mr. Good by phone, they agreed not to put up more flags, not to encourage others to do so, and not to obstruct any council worker or contractor taking them down. Mr. Justice Dexter Diaz set another hearing for July the 9th to be attended by anyone wishing to oppose a court order stopping anyone else from putting up flags or obstructing staff. Mr. Green for the council said, "It is the council's case that no authorisation has been given to the named defendants, or indeed anyone else, to attach flags to lampposts, lighting columns or any other highway structure. So where this has been done, we say it is an offence." He said the council had also wished to pursue an injunction against the name group, but would be happy for them to make a formal undertaking to the court. Agreeing, Mr. Bridge said he'd put up flags in Oxfordshire for about 6 hours in my life. We did not want to cause any distress to anyone, which has been stated, he said. I feel it's a sad day for the flag of our country and what it represents. Ms. Wells, who told the court that she had never put up any flags, but was said to have encouraged others online, added, I'm not going to have anything to do with the flags anymore. It's not worth it. Council leader Tim Bearder said last week, We proudly fly the Union flag and St. George's flag at County Hall, and we fully support the right of residents to display flags on their own private property. However, there's an important distinction between lawful expression and activity that puts people at risk or intimidates residents in their own communities.
Mock mayor is elected in quirky tradition. A mock mayor has been elected in an annual election, a quirky tradition taking place in Abingdon. A town councillor is selected to be the town mayor, and Andrew Skinner has the ceremonial role for the coming year. But there is also an election to choose a mock mayor, the mayor of Ox Street, who leads the Abingdon traditional Morris dancers. On Saturday, polling boxes were placed outside the Brewery Tap pub in Ox Street, and all residents and workers of Ox Street and its side streets, together with all Morris dancers, were entitled to vote. Rob Charlton and Harry Knight were the two candidates, and Harry Knight was elected before being chaired along Ox Street by the Morris dancers, who paraded through the town before gathering close to the marketplace. Three Morris sides took part in the day's celebrations: the Abingdon Traditional Morris Dancers, Summertown Morris, and Oxford City and University Morris.
Fly tipping was dumped minutes from recycling centre. Waste was fly tipped just 10 minutes from an Oxfordshire tip, now subject to strict new rules. Fly tippers dumped the household goods on the verges of Sanford Lane in Kennington. The waste is not far from the Redbridge Recycling Centre in Oxford and now needs to be booked in advance to attend, as per the county's new policy. Vale of the Whitehorse District Council spokesman said, Did you see anyone dumping waste on Sanford Lane, Kennington? We're appealing for witnesses after someone fly-tipped a paddling pool, garden waste, polystyrene, a duvet and a clothes horse. Shockingly, all of these items could have been disposed of entirely free of charge at the Redbridge Recycling Centre, which is just 10 minutes away. If you have any information about where this rubbish may have come from, or saw a vehicle loaded with these items, or have dashcam footage from the area, please contact Envirocrime, southandvale.gov.uk on 01235 422 146. Oxfordshire County Council introduced changes at 7 recycling centres it runs across the country from January this year, with a new scheme requiring online booking for everyone attending the centre to have a form of ID or proof of address. The number of permitted trips to a recycling centre was reduced from 12 to 10 per year, and anyone from outside the county now has to pay £15 to dispose of waste. At the time, the scheme was met with some opposition and fears that would result in increase in fly tippings and environmental crime.
Pothole fillers come under fire. Workers out on Oxfordshire highways filling potholes have been hit, sworn at and spat on while on the job. And it's getting worse, according to an infrastructure boss. The county, which has received repeated calls for action on its highways, including from the Prime Minister, sees more than 1,000 emergency pothole reports a week. According to the County Council, there has been a major rise in repairs, with the number of crews increased from 7 to 25 to tackle its pothole backlog. Since January 2026, contractor M Group has repaired more than 33,000 highway defects, compared to 37,000 potholes filled in the whole of 2024-25. This rise in repairs has also come with rising abuse towards the people carrying out the work. Richard Lovewell from M Group, business director, said, "It just makes me really, really sad. I think what makes me even sadder is the government expect it now, and they just think it's part of the job, and nobody should come to work to be spat at and abused." He explained, "These guys work very, very hard in all weathers and all environments. We appreciate that if we're out with traffic management, it can cause some inconvenience. But there's people getting hit, there's people getting sworn at, and we're doing everything we possibly can. We've brought in body-worn videos, we use static CCTV, anything that we can do." He added, "We recently had a high-speed police chase come through one of our sites. It's one of the major hazards. It's incursions. We obviously shut roads off. People don't take any notice of that. And if that's their shortcut, that's their shortcut. What they've got to realise is that they're putting lives in danger by doing that. Let's be honest. If you worked in a bank, you wouldn't expect people to line up and swear at you all day." Mr. Lovewell wants to address public perception about pothole roadworks, saying, "If we could, we'd resurface every road in Oxfordshire. Obviously, as a contractor, we get given certain budgets." He added, "If a pothole fails for any reason, from a workmanship issue or anything, we repair that free of charge, and that's our risk. I don't think people know that." He also highlighted some of the better experiences the workers He also highlighted some of the better experiences the workers have while out on the job. Young children are often fascinated by the roadworks. Mr. Lovewell said members of his work gangs take the time to chat to the kids, tell them what they're doing. He said kids especially like the Dragon Patcher, a huge, big, fire-breathing pothole machine.
Volunteers keep Steam Rail Centre running. Volunteers have been working behind the scenes at Didcot Railway Centre to keep the tourist attraction running. The Steam Rail Centre, next to Didcot Parkway, attracts thousands of visitors every year. During steam days, trains are running and visitors can enjoy unlimited rides, as well as calling in at other attractions, including the museum, engine shed, shop and cafe. When no steam trains are running, volunteers work hard to make sure the centre and its trains are ready to welcome guests. At the weekend, volunteers, including Sam, Ben and Mark, made sure 1897 built locomotive number 1340 Trojan was refilled with coal. The locomotive has a bunker inside the cab which holds just half a ton of coal. Andrew Snell was another volunteer working at the centre at the weekend. He looks after the exhibits in the Victorian transfer shed, including a 1910 Golden Sunbeam ladies' bicycle, which has recently joined the display. That's the end of the first half of our stories this week. On the notice board this week, we have no birthdays and, thankfully, no deaths. And from My Vision Oxford, we have a list of things which might interest you. There's the Didcot Social Group meeting at the Cornerstone Arts Centre in Station Road. And there are meetings on 8th of July and 12th August and into the autumn. There's a Didcot Wellbeing course meeting at the Cornerstone Arts Centre. And we have dates on the 2nd of July, 6th of August and on to the end of the year. Then Didcot Walking Group, depending on the length of the walk, meet outside the Cornerstone Arts Centre. 26th of June, 10th July, 31st July, and on into the autumn and winter. Didcot Audiobook Group, meeting at Didcot Library from 10:30 to 11:30. The library is in the Broadway, 5th August, 7th October, 2nd December. Wallingford Social Group, meeting at Wallingford Library between 10:30 and 12:30. And we have dates 20th July, 17th of August, September, October, November, December. Abingdon Walking Group. This group meets out inside Coffee Aroma at 11 before heading on a walk depending on weather and the length of walk. That's at 15 High Street, Abingdon. 13th July, 10th of August, 14th September, and on into the autumn. Upcoming events. Accessible boat trip to Wallingford, 10 till 12 and 2 till 4 on the 29th of July and the 4th of August. There is a talk in Abingdon about the Thames Valley Air Ambulance on the 27th of June. And Wiltshire Farm Food Talks, 29th June in Abingdon. Oxfordshire Railway Community Partnership, Wallingford Group, 19th October, and Abingdon, October, November, December. We'll move on now to the second half of our readings. And we'll start with good news about wine production in Oxfordshire.
Vineyard unveils own label wine range. A vineyard in the county has unveiled its first own label English wines. Yew Tree Vineyard, a family-run estate in West Hagbourne near Didcot, has announced the launch of three wines, Bacchus, Ortega and a Rosé, nearly a decade after planting the first vines in 2015. The wines made their debut at the English Wine Week Festival in Henley at the weekend. Ed and Jem Mitchum, founders of the Yew Tree Vineyard, said, "Yew Tree has been a dream for a very long time. When we first planted the vines in 2015, the idea of one day seeing our own name on the bottle felt both exciting and a long way off. The 2025 harvest was the year everything came together. The weather was incredible, the grapes were exactly where we needed them to be, and we knew this was the moment to take the next step." The vineyard, planted on land that has been in Ed's family for four generations, began after Ed returned from a trip to New Zealand in 2007, inspired to pursue viticulture.
Wine makes history with gold medal win. An award-winning wine from Oxfordshire has made history with a gold medal victory at the Decanter World Wine Awards 2026. In a landmark result, 100 Hills Hillside No. 3 2019 has become the country's first wine to claim a coveted gold medal at this year's competition, putting both the producer and Oxfordshire firmly on the global wine map. Hundreds Hills, which is based between Watlington and Henley, prides itself on high-quality sparkling wines crafted from carefully selected vineyard sites in the Chilterns. The historic win marks a major milestone for the county's fast-emerging wine industry and underlines how English producers are increasingly competing with established regions overseas. The result announced in the 23rd year of the Decanter World Wine Awards came to the record-breaking year for UK producers overall. British wineries led the world for medals in sparkling magnum category and delivered their strongest performance to date when all the awards were taken into account. Launched in 2004, DWWA has grown into what is billed as the largest and most prestigious wine competition, with more than 17,000 wines assessed by expert judges every year. The awards are widely regarded as a global benchmark for wine quality, thanks to their international reach, rigorous blind tasting process, and a panel of specialists. Wines are judged on a 100-point scale, with medals ranging from the top tier 50 best in show, and the platinum and gold all require scores of 95 points or more, followed by the silver and bronze. This year's 50 best in show list represented 0.3% of all wines tasted, underlining how hard it is to reach the highest level. The UK recorded one best in show, 2 platinum, 10 gold, 9 silver and 114 bronze medals, giving a total haul of 217 and making 2026 its best year yet for both top tier and overall medals. DWWA Regional Chair for the UK, Simon Field, MW, praised the standard of British wines, highlighting the quality of both fizz and still bottlings. Commenting on the quality of wine in the UK, Mr. Field said, "It's extremely exciting as it is on the up. The sparklers are every bit as good as the most champagnes, and the still wines, once an afterthought, are genuinely interesting and thoughtfully made." In the sparkling Magnum category, best in show went to Balfour Blanc de Blancs, Kent 2018, reinforcing UK's growing strength in traditional method fizz. 100 Hills Hillside No. 3 2019 joined Hamilton's classic Cuvée Brut NV from Hampshire in securing gold for Magnums, while 9 silvers for the UK Magnums added to the impressive total.
Supermarket will give shoppers choice. The arrival of a second budget supermarket in Didcot has been welcomed as planning officials give the new store the go-ahead. Lidl has been given planning permission to build its 9th supermarket in Oxfordshire, despite concerns over flooding. Aldi opened in Didcot in 2015 and has a supermarket at the Jubilee Way roundabout. But shoppers in the town have had to wait over a decade for Lidl to follow. South Oxfordshire District Council has now backed plans for the German retailer for a new supermarket in Abingdon Road. Former Didcot Mayor Mocky Khan said, "This gives the residents of Didcot more choice, especially when you consider the cost of living environment we have at the moment. The town is growing with more new homes being built, and with more growth, it's good to have a wide variety of supermarkets to fit all budgets." The plans for the new supermarket were first submitted in 2024. Didcot Town Council previously objected to the scheme on the grounds of a lack of flood risk mitigation measures, along with the County Council, who said there were insufficient information. But in a report by planning officers granting permission to the supermarket, those issues have now been addressed by Lidl. The officers said the proposals largely accord with the policies around planning, and more can be done to break up the car park with greenery. They said in a report, "Balanced against this policy conflict is the fact that this is a previously developed site, which is currently in a dilapidated state. The proposals represent a significant improvement on the current underutilisation of the site and on its appearance." 34 residents had objected to Lidl's plans, highlighting concerns over extra traffic, there being no need for another supermarket in the town, and there being more appropriate locations to build in their view. Didcot already has an Aldi store just off Broadway and a Sainsbury's, M&S Food Hall and Asda. The nearest Lidl to the new sites are in Wallingford and Abingdon. 3 people wrote in support of the new Lidl, recognising the benefits of a discount food store and the further jobs it will create. Lidl has said its proposals for a Didcot supermarket would deliver 40 full-time equivalent jobs, as well as further employment during the construction phase. No opening date was given by the retailer, while the developer is currently on site progressing with the enabling works. A spokesman said, "We've seen demand for our affordable, high-quality products continue to rise in Oxfordshire, and we're committed to serving more communities in the area. Our new store will create around 40 new jobs and build on our continued growth."
Council pays tribute to unpaid carers. Unpaid carers are being celebrated for the essential support they provide to loved ones. Oxfordshire County Council is recognising their contributions following National Carers Week this month. Carers Week focused efforts on ensuring that carers are identified early, listened to, and supported by workplaces, services, and communities. Rebecca Fletcher, Cabinet Member for Adult Social Care at Oxfordshire County Council, said, "Unpaid carers play a vital role in our communities, often providing support quietly and without recognition. Carers Week was an opportunity to thank carers for everything they do, raise awareness of the pressures they can face, and make sure they know where to turn for support. We are committed to working with partners to build more career-friendly communities across Oxfordshire, where carers are identified early, listened to, and supported to look after their own well-being alongside their caring roles. An estimated 50,000 unpaid carers live in Oxfordshire, supporting older people, disabled individuals, or those living with illness. While caring can be meaningful, it can also strain a person's health, finances, and ability to work. The Council works closely with Carers Oxfordshire, which is commissioned to deliver information, advice and practical support to unpaid carers. This includes help understanding caring roles, accessing assessments, securing breaks and supporting personal well-being." Paul Ringer, Chief Executive of Age UK Oxfordshire, said, "Caring can be deeply rewarding, but it can also be exhausting and isolating."
Cheaper options to help improve the A34 considered. Low-cost options to make the A34 safer are being looked at by the National Highways. Recommendations such as new signage or road markings could be considered in a safety review that will be compiled into a report. Crashes and bad congestion in a constant source of headache for the thousands of motorists who use the dual carriageway from Bicester through the spine of Oxfordshire and West Berkshire down to the M3 in Hampshire. This newspaper regularly reports on incidents on the A34 causing huge congestion and stop-start traffic. Lee Dillon, the MP for Newbury south of the Oxen border, has been pushing for safety improvements along the A34. Concerns chiefly revolve around short on-slip roads and poor visibility. In March, the government decided not to take forward the wider A34 north and south of Oxford scheme in the Road Investment Strategy 3, RIS 3. This meant there would be no chance of funding for big upgrades that could potentially bring greater change. Mr. Dillon said, "Major upgrades had been swept aside, but there were still important questions to answer about what could be done to improve safety now." After following up with the Minister for Roads and writing to National Highways, I met with officials earlier this week to seek answers on the progress of their A34 safety study. There was some encouraging news. He said that the National Highways confirmed the long-awaited study covering key junctions and slip roads will be finalised in the next few weeks. The study has examined a range of measures, from larger interventions to lower cost measures such as signage, road markings and other operational changes to improve the route, he added. The next step is key. Once the study is complete, National Highways will present its recommendations to ministers at the Department for Transport, who will then decide which improvements should be taken forward. While funding remains tight and no changes aren't guaranteed, this is positive progress, and National Highways have acknowledged that there is scope for upgrades. So once that study is complete, I will be scrutinising the findings closely and lobbying ministers hard to ensure this study translates into practical measures on the route. He said motorists need a safer A34 and vowed to push to make it happen. Greg Stone, route manager for National Highways, previously told the BBC that safety is taken very seriously and pointed out resurfacing projects, upgraded safety barriers and hedge trimming in recent months. In an answer to Didcot and Wantage MP Ollie Glover in the House of Commons, Transport Minister Simon Lightwood said the last road safety review took place on the A34 in 2017. He said other work included upgraded lay-bys, improving road signs and markings.
60 mile per hour limits on rural roads under review. Widespread 60 mile an hour Oxfordshire speed limit reductions are being reviewed by the County Council on dozens of rural roads. Oxfordshire County Council has said that it is examining all of the county's A and B roads with dozens of bespoke reductions in the offing. Gary Eapes, Cabinet Member for Transport, said, "This review is about reducing the deaths and serious injuries on our roads. The premise that no one should be killed or seriously injured as a result of a road collision, whatever mode of transport they are using, is at the heart of Vision Zero strategy. Making sure speed limits are safe and appropriate is key to achieving this. Oxfordshire's last major A and B road speed limit review was carried out 15 years ago, so this review is much needed. The examination of speed limits and safety has been ongoing since 2025, looking into whether existing measures are appropriate, using evidence such as collision data, road layout, and how routes are used. This has already led to reductions on some roads, including lowering national speed limits in sections from 60 miles an hour to 50 or 40 miles per hour. Other measures include junction changes or traffic management, with it all being aimed to ensure rural roads are safe for all users, recognising that many are narrow, winding and shared by drivers, cyclists, walkers and horse riders. The County Council has said the government data shows that its policies have led to a significant improvements in road safety, with serious and fatal collisions falling sharply. However, despite this, Mr. Eapes said that they are far from being complacent. So far, the review has seen changes being approved on stretches of the A4074, the A40, the A420 and the A417, as well as corridors such as the A4260 and associated B roads. Additionally, a consultation on changes on the A361 have been completed, with a decision to be taken in July on whether to progress these. Now around 60 more schemes are coming forward in 2026 to 27 as part of Vision Zero programme. Stakeholder consultation will begin later this month, including parish and town councils, Thames Valley Police and bus operators. This will be followed by a strategy consultation later in the year, where the public will be invited to have their say.
Rising female racing star fuels young engineers' ambitions. A motorsport masterclass has fueled the ambitions of young female engineers. Held at Oxford Brookes University, the event was part of International Women in Engineering Day, and aim to inspire school-aged girls to consider careers in motorsport and engineering. Students from Oxfordshire schools, including Cheyney, Headington Rye and Chiltern Primary, attended the day-long programme, which featured talks from industry professionals and was headlined by rising Swiss racing driver Karen Gaillard of the Iron Dames motor racing team. Ms Gaillard made her GT3 debut in the Michelin Le Mans Cup in 2024. She said, "I'm really happy to be here. I want to show these girls that they can do whatever they want in life. They should believe in themselves and follow their dreams, even if people say they can't because they are women."
Appeal lodged over plan for 200 homes. An appeal has been lodged over controversial plans to build 200 homes just outside Didcot. As well as the homes, developer Obsidian Strategic also wants to build a special educational needs school on the land to the northeastern edge of the town. The proposed development would be part of the Garden Town project, which will result in 15,050 homes and 20,000 high-tech jobs delivered in the greater Didcot area. The scheme was refused by South Oxfordshire District Council earlier this year. The development attracted objections from 18 people, as well as Longwittenham Parish Council, Didcot Town Council, Campaign to Protect Rural England, Didcot Garden Town Team and Whittenham Against Other Development. Objector Janet Haylett of Westfield Road previously said, "Over the past few years, we've watched as Didcot has marched towards us with estates of monopoly houses and already taken over a significant part of the parish." The planning officer's report said, "Weighing against the development, it would permanently change the strong, undeveloped rural character of the site, extending the town of Didcot east of Ladygrove Road into the parish of Longwittenham. It would substantially reduce the gap between Didcot, Longwittenham and the national landscape and would not protect and enhance the landscape, countryside and rural character. In conclusion, it is considered that the adverse impacts of the development would significantly and demonstrably outweigh the benefits. The scheme therefore fails to represent sustainable development, and the material considerations outlined above do not justify making a decision other than in accordance with the development plan. Developer has now appealed the decision and the planning inspectorate will hold an inquiry on October the 7th this year." In the appeals document it said, "The appellant's case is that the council cannot demonstrate a sufficient supply of deliverable housing land and that as such the most important policies in the development plan for determining the application, the subject of this appeal, i.e. those for the supply of land, are out of date and that the appeal proposal represents sustainable development which should be acceptable in any event. The appeal proposals will deliver new market and affordable housing, which are much needed to help meet the strategic growth requirements of South Oxfordshire. The provision for a SEND school will also provide a clear benefit. The appeal proposals will further deliver significant environmental enhancement of the site and will demonstrably provide a biodiversity net gain to the area and the improved landscape edge to the northeast of Didcot. The appeals proposal will deliver economic benefits for the area, including the provision of new jobs."
Closed school could become housing site. The site of a closed down private school in Abingdon is now up for sale and the site could be sold for housing. Our Ladies Abingdon in Radley Road was forced to close permanently for financial reasons, according to its governors, who sent letters to parents in August, alerting them to the news. Now it is being marketed for sale by commercial real estate company Newmark, with the sale price subject to offer. And this could include the use of the site for residential purposes. Newmark says there is an opportunity to acquire the freehold interest of a former school in a sought-after location with potential for redevelopment subject to planning permission. However, Oxford West and Abingdon MP Leila Moran indicated hopes remain among some residents that the buildings could be used again for education. She said, "I recently met with a group of local residents and parishioners who wish to re-establish the site as an educational facility and open the site up for use by community groups. I am supportive of the group's proposals as the reintroduction of educational provisions and access for community use will offer ongoing social value to Abingdon and the local community." The group has not yet gone public, and it is not known whether it has yet made any formal offer to buy or obtain access to the site and its facilities. Highlights of the site, according to Newmark's sale prospectus, include the opportunity to acquire the former school and associated land, use class F1, with potential for redevelopment, extensive and attractive grounds and playing fields, combined total gross internal area, GIA, of approximately 105,710 square feet. That's 9,817 square metres. Site area of circa 9.10 acres, including a separate playing field, and a drop-off parking of 5.6 acres. Freehold offered with vacant possession. The Newmark site online sales page adds that the site is located in an affluent, sought-after location with strong demand for independent schools. It says potential for alternative uses, including redevelopment for residential, care, retirement or retail, subject to the necessary consents. The statement of affairs submitted to Companies House last year revealed Our Ladies Abingdon Trustees Limited racked up debts of £100,555,596 owed to 121 company creditors. At the end of last year, a team of liquidators hired auctioneers Wiles Hardy to sell school equipment, including the school's fleet of minibuses. A statement from Wiles Hardy said earlier, "Following sustained financial pressures and the recent introduction of VAT on school fees, pupil numbers declined significantly, leading to the school's closure in August 2025. Acting on behalf of the appointed insolvency practitioners, we delivered specialist valuation, marketing and asset disposal services as part of the process."
Residents ask for views on parking changes. Once residents are being urged to voice their opinion on proposed parking changes in the town centre. The changes prompted by requests from locals and Wantage Town Council aim to introduce new restrictions and amend existing ones. Under the proposals, certain areas become residents' permit holders' parking only zones, and a new double yellow line and single yellow lines will be introduced or amended at various locations. Residents of specific properties on Church Street, Priory Road and Murrayfield can apply for annual residence and visitors' parking permits. The cost of a residence permit is currently £150 per year, while visitors' permits will be free for the first block of 25 and a second block costing £31.50. Residents aged 70 or over can obtain a visitor's permits for free. A maximum of 50 visitor's permits can be issued per year. Blue badge holders can park in permitted areas without displaying a permit. Contractors can apply for permits at separate rates, and registered carers and healthcare workers can apply for care permits. The proposals are independent of the broader Wantage Marketplace Improvement Scheme. Residents can review the detailed proposal and participate in the consultation process. The deadline for submitting responses is 5 p.m. on July the 17th.
Riders jump for joy at new BMX track. A new BMX pump track in Harwell saw more than 100 youngsters take to their bikes to ride the course as it opened for the first time. Harwell Pump Track opened in Harwell Recreation Ground on Sunday, June the 21st, when the community gathered for an official ribbon cutting of the popular new facility by some keen young riders, where Parish Council Chair Vaughan Humphreys gave a speech. Construction for the off-road cycling track began in March, and despite facing some setbacks, such as when motorcyclists broke into the unfinished track and caused damage, it has now been successfully completed. A spokesperson for Harwell Parish Council said, "This is a remarkable achievement and a genuine community effort. It was initiated by the Parish Council, but it came together through the dedication of our officers, particularly our deputy clerk, volunteers and individual families, companies who gave their time and expertise generously, and our remarkable partners at Ox Trails. The whole community can be proud of what has been built here." Council Chair Mr. Humphreys added, "It was a fantastic day for Harwell."
Free summer holiday fun for children. Children can enjoy rugby, cookery and museum visits this summer. The activities are part of Oxfordshire County Council's Holiday Activities and Food, HAF, programme, which is designed for young people in the county. Open to children aged 4 to 16 who receive free school meals, the scheme provides up to 16 sessions throughout the summer holidays, each lasting at least 4 hours. Kate Gregory, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Public Health and Inequalities, said, "This programme provides free activities and meals for more than 18,000 children and young people in Oxfordshire who are eligible for free school meals. It helps support children's health and well-being while reducing holiday hunger and social isolation, and is just another example of how we're working to tackle health inequalities across the county. Each session includes at least 60 minutes of physical activity, practical advice on eating well, and a healthy meal. Families can find and book activities through the HAF platform, where eligibility is checked automatically against existing records. Further details about the programme can be attained by emailing haf@oxfordshire.gov.uk. That's the last news story for this week. Many thanks to the Herald and the Oxford Mail for the stories we've used. And thanks too to the volunteers here for their time. If you've any comments to make on this production, please phone the Dawn Secretary, Karen, on 07939 265517. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this newspaper today, and remember, there are extra items at the end of this recording. Please put the memory stick back in the pouch and post it back to us ready for next week. Goodbye, and thank you for listening.